Please keep clear of the doors. You are delaying the departure of this train.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Joel Live, Joel.live. You'd think Dot would be my middle name. In fact, I've heard that joke so many times in my life. Is your middle name Dot? Joel Com? No, it's not. And Com is my real name, which is why it would have been an incredibly cruel joke to have named our daughter Dorothy, because then she would have gone through life known as Dot Com. And that would have been absolutely horrible and atrocious and mean and probably child abuse. So we're going to get started right away today. We're going to have a really free-flowing conversation with somebody who's a natural free-flower. In fact, he makes the flow look so easy. And we're not just talking about his ability to rap, because he's got that skill, but also his cultural awareness, his ability to engage with the general public and his fans in a way that just makes it feel effortless. He's got a lot cooler head than mine, and I try to keep a super cool head in a very charged culture. And we're going to find out how he does it, and got a lot of other questions for him as well. And so bring in my man Zuby with us right now. Hey, Zuby, how you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, Joel. How you doing?
Man, you got a big-ass microphone there. Is that a Yeti?
Yeah, that is a Yeti right there.
Are you pretty happy with it?
Yeah, it's solid. Is the sound coming through well?
No, you sound great. I hear different things. Some people really like the Yeti. I've got a Heil here that I've been super happy with. But that's probably the biggest Yeti. Either that or it's super close to the camera, so it just looks like it's a...
Yeah. It's the normal size. I think it's just its location.
You're kind of a Renaissance man. You know,
something like that.
I mean, but you probably didn't think of yourself in that way. You're just doing what Zuby do, right?
Yeah, man. Everything started out with just the music. I mean, I released my first album in 2006. I used to simply be a rapper, not a rapper slash this slash that. I just started out as a rapper. I started rapping when I was actually studying computer science at Oxford University. Uh-huh. And I released my first album when I was in my second year of university. Started doing my music full time in 2011. And yeah, since then it's grown and expanded. I started my podcast last year, Real Talk with Zuby. Also released my first book last year, Strong Advice, Zuby's Guide to Fitness for Everybody. Started doing appearing on a lot of other people's podcasts and shows, getting more TV appearances, all sorts of stuff. So it's all just kind of grown and expanded, but it all started out with just the music.
Yeah. How old are you now?
I'm 33.
So, man, it's like, boom, rocket ship, and all this stuff is taking off. I mean, you've been on Rogan, you've been on Adam Carolla, you've been on Glenn Beck, you've been hanging out with Dave Rubin, Ben Shapiro, Candace Owens, you know, a lot of these people that I would consider, you know, heroes of media of the modern age, you know, a lot of truth tellers, and you are a teller of truth. I see it in all of your tweets. It's like you are. I guess I would also call you a journalist of sorts, because you kind of report on culture and current events from what seems to be a very objective viewpoint.
Look, I try to be. I mean, everyone has their biases. I would not call myself a journalist, so I wouldn't want to be held to the same standards as journalists. Even though I don't think they're being held to very high standards right now, it doesn't seem that way. But I'm someone who always tries to be, well, I don't try to be authentic. I just am authentic. Right? It doesn't take effort. I think that what most people are doing actually is expending effort in not being authentic and hiding certain parts of themselves away from the world and not sharing their true thoughts and true feelings, true personality, the things that they're really into, the things that they really believe. And I used to be the same. I mean, for the first 10 years of my music career, especially when it came to social media. I mean, I've been on Twitter since 2009. I've been on Facebook since 2004. Prior to that, I was on things like MySpace. So for the first 10 years of my career, really, if not longer, I wanted to only use those platforms for my music. I only wanted people to know Zuby as a rapper, as a musician. I didn't share any of my views, whether that's political, religious, social, cultural, anything like that. My views haven't shifted massively over time, but I used to just keep that privately. Anyone who knows me in person, I'd have those conversations with anything like that. But I was like, let me not put that on Twitter. Let me not put that on Facebook, Instagram, whatever, because that's not what I want. That's a distraction from the main thing that I do. And then in 2018, I just sort of shifted that a little. I just started revealing a little bit more and more of myself. And lo and behold, it turned out that a lot of people really liked that and were really attracted to it and thought that my voice was and is needed. And so it's kind of grown and evolved from there. Of course, I had that huge catalyst at the beginning of last year where I had that viral deadlift video, which went super crazy and got, I think that thing's had, just on Twitter, that tweet itself has done over 8 million impressions now, which is absolutely bonkers.
You know, for people who don't know what you're talking about there, I'm actually going to do a screen share
and go ahead.
Put that video up here. But why don't you set the stage before I show it?
Yeah, sure. So on the 26th of February, I think, 2019, I posted a 9-second video on my Twitter of me deadlifting about 230 kilos, which is 500 and something pounds. It was more than the British women's deadlift record in my class. And so I wrote something like, I keep hearing about how biological men don't have any physical advantage over women in 2019. So watch me destroy the British women's deadlift record without trying. P.S. I identified as a woman while lifting the weight. Don't be a bigot. And it went bananas. I mean, you can see the stats there. You can't see all of them, but you can see that has 19,700 retweets, 77,000 likes, 2.5 million views. It just went bananas. It went totally crazy.
Added one more to that right there.
Yeah. I think Twitter's been removing the likes too. But
That doesn't surprise me. Why? Why would you do this?
Why would I do that?
Because yeah. Why? What's the point of doing this deadlift? Well, I know that there's certainly a commentary there. And what is it?
The commentary is that biological men should not be competing against women in top tier sports because it doesn't make any sense. And we've known this for thousands of years, but people suddenly lost their minds a couple of years ago, apparently, and decided it might be a good idea. So I wanted to, rather than tell, I thought, you know, let me just play by the same rules. And I'm now the British women's deadlift and bench press record holder.
But you're not a woman, you're a man.
How dare you?
How dare you? I mean, not you identify as a man right now, right?
I do right now, but like on Thursdays, if I'm in the gym, sometimes that changes.
You say people lost their mind. Go ahead and elaborate on that. What do you mean?
Oh, you know what I mean, Joel. I don't know when this happened. I mean, sometime in the last decade, a lot of people in the modern Western world seem to have just lost their minds. There's a whole lot of ideas and ideologies and nonsense and over political correctness, which is stopping people from thinking normally and behaving normally. And a great example is what I showed in that deadlift, which is, you know, this idea that anybody can be anything at any time and everyone is supposed to completely indulge that and believe that. And if you don't, then you're some sort of horrible, evil person or bigot, and you must be opposed. So rather than sort of fighting any fire with fire, I figured, you know what, if these are the rules, let me just play by the rules. And sometimes if you play by people's own rules, it's quite easy to checkmate them, because if they have a problem with it, then they're sort of violating their own rules. If someone saw that and said, hey, he's not really a woman, then firstly, I've been misgendered. And, I can also then call them transphobic, right? Because they're denying me my lived experience. They've been preaching to us for years that I have to accept that anyone is whatever they say they are. So I've told you that I'm a woman. So if you don't now refer to me as a woman and use the correct pronouns and accept my world record, my British record breaking deadlift, then that would be bigotry on your part if you're someone who subscribes to that ideology. So it was done in a humorous way, but I think most people got the point. So it was fun.
Along those lines, just a few weeks ago, you got temporarily banned from Twitter because of a tweet where you said, okay, dude.
How dare I? I know, hate speech.
What happened?
So let me go back on the story. So I'd written a tweet which was going viral, and this is prior to COVID. This is when people were still on this nonsense, right? You've noticed that a lot of this nonsense has sort of faded since we've now got this real problem.
Since we have something serious to...
Dude, for years I've been saying that we need a war, and that was always like a half joke. Like, I don't like war. I don't want bad things to happen. But the truth is we've sort of been sleepwalking for the past several decades. And yeah, that has weird impacts on society, apparently. So, okay. So in terms of the OK Dude suspension, so I had written a list of four or five things that recommendations for single women to make themselves more attractive to men. And one of these things, and anyway, someone responded to this. There were a lot of responses to this, thousands. And someone responded saying something like, "This is terrible advice. I bet I sleep with more women than you do and you don't know what you're talking about," or something like that. And I just quote tweeted it and I just said, "Okay, dude." And that was it. That was literally it. 5 days later, or about a week later, I get an email from Twitter saying that I've been blocked out of my account for violating their hateful conduct policy. Had some blurb about how you can't insult people or harass them or threaten them based on their race, their sex, their gender, their sexuality, religion, etc. I was like, okay, I don't believe I've ever done this. I'm a pretty decent guy. Like, this is everything I oppose. So it had the offending tweet there as I scrolled down, and it says, you know, "We determined that this tweet below violated our hateful conduct policy." So I scroll down and I just see, it just says, "Okay, dude." And so I had this moment of, you know, I was like, wait, am I being trolled? Is this some kind of like scam? And then I go on my Twitter, I would try to go on the Twitter app, and I'm blocked out of the app. I just get the screen saying that I violated their policy. And until I either appeal or delete the offending tweet, then I can't get back on my account. Keep in mind, I have over 200,000 followers. So right. my Twitter account is pretty handy to me. Yeah. And of course, saying "okay, dude" is not hateful conduct, just to be clear. and so I actually appealed it because I was like, okay, I haven't done anything wrong. So maybe something in their algorithm, maybe some bot or whatever. Maybe a lot of people flagged something and a bot just thought, okay, we'll just do this for now. So I submitted an appeal. And then the next day I woke up and I had another email from Twitter saying, we've manually reviewed your appeal. And our moderators have determined that this tweet does in fact violate our hateful conduct policies. If you would like to regain access to your account, then you need to delete this tweet and your account will be reinstated in 24 hours. So I was essentially held to ransom. I had to delete the highly offensive tweet saying, "Okay, dude," you know, that all those evil two words. I mean, okay, wow. Definitely hate speech, dude, evil. I mean, right. I mean, I don't even use profanity, but I mean, I had to pay penance for calling somebody dude.
Well, in the Midwest where I grew up, we call girls dude.
That's not even unique to the Midwest. That's a global thing.
Yo, dude, everybody's a dude. Hey, do me a favor. You're running a little hot right now. Go ahead and pull your volume down just a little bit.
Yeah, no problem.
I want people to hear you without going, Zuby's.
Yeah, I can probably sit back a little bit as well.
Yeah, that's good, man. You know, you could have said, okay, human being, but then you would have risked offending somebody who identifies as an alien.
Yeah, I mean, they could have been a chicken, a cow, dog. I don't know. And to be clear, I had no idea who this person I'm responding to. It turns out this person is a biological male who apparently identifies as a woman. So apparently, I think that was the supposed thing that I violated their misgendering policy by calling a biological male dude, despite dude not being a gender term to begin with and me not even knowing who the person is. But they assume this was some kind of malice on my part. But hey, I sold over 200 t-shirts off the bat. I've got my new single coming out 8th of May, which is called "Okay, Dude," shooting a music video next week. So
can you give us a few lines of the song?
I'm working hard to make a milli, baby. Flow was never wheezy. Couple hundred thousand fans in it. All started with a CD. Used to hustle on the street, and now they see me on the TV. Going viral like Corona, so they try to quarantine me. A couple real celebrities, but most of them are frauds. Tell you how I really feel, because my only fear is God. They're lying on the media and lying through the mob. Hate a simp on social media. They've never seen abroad. I be coming to America like Sammy and Akeem. I'm uniting black and white and brown like Martin Luther's dream. And I get around the internet like presidential memes. And I I did it independently. I never had a team. You've come a long way. Please don't go commercial now. Careful with your words. Don't be controversial now. Winning nothing less. F a victimhood mentality, because I am not oppressed, and that's a check to your reality.
Yeah. Here's one of the things about you as a rapper, and I've listened to you know, to some of what you've done, and you're clean, you know, you seek to inspire, and there's rap music can get a bad rap because of a lot of popular rap. You know, I've been listening to Ben for a long time, Shapiro, and
oh yeah,
he was down on rap for a long time, and then, you know, I think you kind of pushed them to the, okay, it doesn't all have to be concertos, right, to be music. Yeah. You know, my take on it is that mainstream rap is culturally dangerous, right? Mm. When you're talking about bitches and hoes all the time, you're being demeaning to women, and you're certainly not helping, you know, the population with that type of mentality. Obviously, you're probably tracking with that, but feel free to expound.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's complicated. I mean, I love hip hop. Hip hop rap is my favorite kind of music. It's the genre that I do, and I love it to death. It's my favorite type of music. And, you know, I do criticize the things that I love, and I have plenty of criticisms of a lot of rap. I mean, a lot of music in general, a lot of entertainment in general. I mean, I think it leads to a deeper question, which is sort of like, why are those messages that people often say that they don't like, and those messages and imagery and things that people criticize, why are we drawn to them? Why are so many people drawn to them? People say they don't like violence. They don't want these lyrics disrespecting women or talking about selling crack or being in a gang or doing this or doing that. But it's a weird demand and supply thing, isn't it? Because if most people were turned off by it, then these songs and these artists wouldn't be selling millions upon millions of albums and doing billions of streams and billions of video views. You know, there is certainly a demand for it. It's the same with
people drawn to, you know, our bass qualities, you know.
Clearly. I mean,
and it's nothing new.
No. And I'm not pretending I'm totally innocent in this. So, I mean, in terms of my own art, I don't put that out there, but do I listen to it? Sure. Do I play some violent video games? Well, I barely play video games, but when I do, sure. Do I watch violent movies? Sure, right? There's stuff that I watch or listen to as entertainment, which I totally separate from my reality. And I'm not someone who's easily influenced and never have been. I mean, I've been listening to hip hop for over 20 years and I don't even swear, right? So I'm God not, darn it. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I've had people be like, man, how do you listen to this stuff? And it doesn't impact you in any way. And maybe I'm somewhat unique in that regard, but I can totally understand a lot of the criticisms. And, you know, the best I can do is, and this is what I've done from the very beginning, from my first album, it's not like I was there and then I massively changed or something. I've always been like, look, my message is going to be positive. It's going to be inspirational. Everyone else, look, I can only control myself. Other people in the world are going to do what they do, and they're going to share their thoughts and their opinions and whatever. So the best that I can do, this is also coming back to why I started speaking out more on social media and podcasts and sharing more of my views, is because the world needs balance, right? And it seems like the balance has been shifting too hard in one direction for a long time. And no one is challenging certain ideas or certain narratives, and no one is, you know, totally speaking the truth and just being honest and everything like that. So I was like, okay, you know what? There's all this negativity out there. There's all this aggression. There's all of these messages that are being sent out, often being sent out to, you know, very, very young people and children even. So why don't I be someone, sure, I can criticize it all I want, but why don't I just be a positive force? Why don't I be a countering force to this? So if I don't like this message that's coming here, it's like, okay, look, well, this is my message, and this is what I think, and this is what I believe. And the people who are naturally drawn to it will be drawn to it. The people who are turned off by it will be turned off by it. And there's those too. When it comes to my own personal music, the most common criticisms that I get are the same as the most common compliments and praises that I get. It's literally people say the same thing, whether they like it or they don't like it. You have some people who are like, man, I love the fact that You know, you don't swear, and I can actually like play your songs in the car with my kids, and it's positive and it's inspirational, and I can actually hear every word that you're saying, and I understand it, and I like the wordplay, and I like the lyrics. And then you've got people who are like, oh, it's too lyrical. It's corny because it's not negative. It's not aggressive enough. I don't like the fact that like he sounds, I don't like the fact that he speaks so clearly. You know, I've had people say that I sound white because they can actually understand what, firstly, that's really demeaning, right?
Racist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like the idea that if you are articulate, that you somehow sound white. And all that sort of stuff. So it kind of shows the two different mentalities that are at play there. So sometimes people will be criticizing me for certain things, and I'm like, okay, well, those are the same things that people like about my music. I want people to hear what I'm saying. I want to be uplifting. I want to be positive. I want to be inspirational. I'm not trying to sell garbage and poison to children and put that all in their brains. There's enough people doing that. Like I said, let me not add to it.
Yeah, there are. It's, you know, I'm glad to see Kanye kind of make the shift to
amen.
To he's gone.
Big real talk, yeah.
Clean that up. Have you had an opportunity to meet with him or interview?
No, but I know that I will.
Yeah, you yeah, will.
I mean, I feel like it's in the stars somewhere.
Of course it is. That's why, you know, when I wrote about this interview, I'm like, all right, probably not going to be able to catch this cat in a few years because, you know, your star is rising. And, you know, that means ego needs to be kept in check. And
it always will be, man.
I think so, too.
You know what? The thing is, see, this is something a lot of people don't know about me, because the vast majority of people who know me only discovered me in the past year, which is kind of weird. Right. So as I said before, I mean, I've got 8 albums and EPs out there. I put out my first release in 14 years ago. So I'm not new to all this. So more people know me now, and more people are, I have more fans, I have more haters, I have more detractors. Just there's more awareness of who Zuby is now. But for me, I've had a long time. Like, this has been like a very slow grind. So when it comes to any concept of like fame or ego or humility or staying grounded or whatever like that, it's like, man, I've had so much practice in this, right? Whether I get people who, you know, a lot of people ask me, man, how do you deal with every day in, day out? How do you deal with just the level of hate, the level of criticism, even the level of praise, just all of this stuff just constantly flooding at you? And it's like, hey, number one, this is what I wanted. You know, I didn't get into the game to be hated, but you know, I wanted people to know me. I want millions of people to hear my message. And I understand and accept that if you're opening yourself up to praise, then you're also opening yourself up to criticism. So I've been dealing with that to some degree since I was in my teens. And I accepted a long time ago, you know what? Not everyone's going to like you. You can make whatever you do, whatever art you create, doesn't matter. You're always going to be criticized. You're going to be praised. You're going to be disliked. People are going to say whatever they want to say, and you can't really do anything about it. So for me, that's a big part of the impetus to just be like, you know what? I'm just going to do me.
I'm going to look at it like this. You figure no matter who the president of the United States is, whether it's Trump or Obama or Clinton, whoever, mm-hmm. the president rarely gets more than, you know, 50% approval. So if the president can't get half of the people to, no. you know, side with them, who am I? I'm just, forget about it. You can't, it's no. much easier to find your tribe mm-hmm. and dismiss the haters.
Yeah. And the thing with music as well, specifically, is that there is no musician, there is no band, there is no artist in the world. There's no artist that most people like.
None. If your name is Nickelback,
right? Literally none. Like, think of the biggest, most famous, most successful artist right. in the world. Do more than 50% of people like them? No. Like, it doesn't
only
matter.
Michael Jackson, I think. That's probably just.
Oh, gosh. I don't even think so. I don't even think, especially after, you know, all the personal stuff. I legit. Yeah. Even with the music itself. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's probably got the highest percent in terms of the pure music. But I wouldn't be surprised if more than 50% of people didn't like his music. It doesn't mean billions of people probably like his music. But, you know, you could still have 2 billion people who like it and 3 billion people who are like, nah. And it doesn't matter, any band, any artist, and even people just have different genres. Someone who hates hip hop is, no matter what I do, no matter what song I make, they're probably not going to like it just because they don't even like the genre. Mm-hmm. there are genres of music where I'm not into them. So no matter how good technically or whatever the song is, it's just not my thing. It doesn't vibe with me. And, I accept it. It's like, look, that's going to happen. Even within the world of hip hop, if you have some, hip hop is quite multivariate, just like rock and roll is. Okay. So you might have someone who's into sort of like Coldplay kind of music, right? But that doesn't mean that they're going to be into like Iron Maiden or some heavy death metal, like Cannibal Corpse. You know what I mean? Like they're in the same sort of wide genre, but my music is totally different to like mumble rap or like super gangster rap or hardcore rap or whatever. Like they're actually different genres. So I wouldn't necessarily, if someone likes Kanye or someone likes, Nas or Tech N9ne or something like that, then yeah, there's a decent chance they'll like my music. But if they're into Gucci Mane and Young Thug and Lil Pump or whatever, these are artists who are just like, they're all rappers, but their style of rap is totally different from mine.
I was a DJ back in the 80s. So I remember, Sugar Hill Gang and playing that when that first came out. And I wonder, did you come up listening to DC Talk?
No, I didn't. I've heard of them, but I'm not very familiar with their music.
They were on top of the Christian rap, multiple Grammys and Dove Awards. And go back 20 years ago.
Okay.
We're doing, 15, 20 years ago still holds today. Two white guys and one black guy. In fact, they did a track at the end of one of the albums where they sing, "We're just two honks and a Negro serving the Lord."
Oh man, you got to be able to laugh at yourself, man.
This whole thing, I feel like we're living in this era where there's almost some unseen hand that's trying to get people to be racist. And the irony is that we are mostly, except for this one visual cue that you can see, we're the same.
Of course, man. And look, that's how I was raised, Joel, from the very beginning. I mean, I grew up in Saudi Arabia. Literally, from the very beginning, I have been surrounded by people who look different. I've been surrounded by people of different religions, different cultures, different everything. Like, you can look at a picture of my preschool class. And it's, just like a little UN or whatever. So from the beginning, I've had friends who are everything, like whatever. And I'm still the same. It's not even in me. That's why I feel some dismay. We were talking earlier about how the modern Western world has started to get weird in the last sort of 5 to 10 years. And that's one thing, this whole like identity politics and intersectionality and lots of these ideas that are largely stemming out of academia, but which have sort of slowly started filtering into different parts of society and, things becoming white this and black that and this. And I'm just like, look, this is a step backwards. Like I've been over this since I was 2. Okay. So like, why are we still, I don't even think most people are. Why are a small percentage of people still on this nonsense? Like who cares? I really don't care. I'm here talking to you. I'm talking to Joel. This isn't a conversation between a black man and a black white. It's like whatever. As you said, that's totally surface level.
Yeah, you may as well say, hey, it's a conversation between a bald guy and a guy with hair. I mean, it's a difference. You're just recognizing one characteristic, and you shave that, right? That's not. Yeah,
I'm not balding. Yeah, that's my choice. Saves me a lot of money.
You, I think I heard you say that you were on Facebook in 2004. Is that right?
I was one of the first people.
Because that would have been said at Oxford, right?
Yeah.
So social has changed dramatically. I was on MySpace early and Twitter and Facebook in 2007. But what we're seeing today, what do you think is going on in culture that people are so... it's so easy for them to just and let their emotions, some really, really hateful emotions out on total strangers or celebrities, but they don't know them. What's up with that?
Wow. You're discussing my daily experience here. Mm-hmm. Firstly, I want to say that the love outweighs the hate like 10 to 1. Mm-hmm. It does. It really does. But the problem is that when you get, to give anyone an idea, on an average day, I get about 60,000 notifications just on Twitter.
Wow.
Right?
So, I hope you have them turned off, right?
No, they're turned off. But if they're on, then yeah. 60,000 a day. So have a think, do some number crunching on that. So I don't know. I think social media is a weird thing. I often say that we're currently living in the biggest experiment in human history right now with the advent of smartphones and social media, because we are not all supposed to be connected like this. And it's amazing that we are in many ways. If you're a creator, if you're a builder, if you're someone who is positive and likes to reach people and help people and inspire people, then it's amazing. I mean, look at what we're doing right now. This is magic, right? If our ancestors could see this and know that we are having a conversation in real time from different countries, we can see each other, people can watch live and comment and interact. That's witchcraft, basically, right? So what we're doing right now is crazy. And we don't really know what the long-term effects are. Right? Hundreds of thousands of people are not meant to, you're not meant to be able to reach everybody in the world at all times, which you can almost do now. I mean, we got 4 billion people are now using social media, and that's estimated to go up to like 7 billion in the next few years. So that's bonkers. So I think what's happening is, firstly, I think social media and smartphones are rewiring people to a large degree. And I think this has sort of been shown. And what else is happening is that people are now just able to express things and communicate in a way that we previously could not. So all of the sort of fundamental parts of human beings haven't sort of changed or evolved or anything over the last 100 or a couple thousand years, where we're literally the same people. All that's happened really is the technology has advanced and the culture has advanced somewhat, but we're still the same people with the same emotions and issues and tribalism and anger and hostility and jealousy and happiness and sadness, all those same emotions, all those same issues, everything like that. It's always been there, but you just weren't able to see it, right? I mean, you can look back in history and you can see how it came out in various ways, but now it's just like, on a daily basis, every second, every minute, everyone's brain, you can just see it, right? What is Twitter? Twitter is just like a massive room where you've got like 300 million people just sort of like screaming into this room and people reacting to the stuff that they're shouted. There's no context.
It's not. There's the word right there. The word you used, react.
Yes.
Right. In times before social media, when we didn't have this instant ability to vent, people would stop and think before they took certain actions. But now you see a tweet from somebody and you disagree or you don't like them, boom, 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 without really engaging wisdom, mm-hmm. people just react. And
yes.
what good ever comes of allowing our emotions to just carry us without thinking?
Not a lot. But the truth is that the majority of people are driven primarily by emotion. This is the reality. I mean, I have a very rare personality type. Like, this is something I didn't realize just how extreme it was until a couple of years ago, where I actually did a personality test. I'm in like the bottom 2% of, are you familiar with the Big Five personality trait?
No, which one is this?
Okay. So the Big Five is, the main five components are, openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, assertiveness, and neuroticism. So, and then each of those is broken down into two subcategories, and it's a fantastic personality model. It really explains a lot. It even helps you to predict people's, you can predict people's genders with it. You can predict people's political beliefs, et cetera. But one thing that's really interesting is I tested myself, and I'm actually in the bottom 2% of the world's population when it comes to the trait neuroticism. And neuroticism is essentially how sensitive you are to negative emotion. So how volatile you are, how easily you get angry, upset, sad, depressed, anxious, etc. So someone who's extremely high in neuroticism is probably going to spend a lot of time feeling with dealing with anxiety and depression and just being super duper emotional. Someone at the extreme opposite end is the opposite, which is me. So, right, like 90. So if I'm in a room of 100 people, there's probably only going to be one or two people who are less neurotic than me. And this manifests in a lot of interesting ways. And one of the key ones is that I'm just not emotional. Like, I'm not sensitive to negative emotion at all. So I can see all, I can deal with all of this stuff and not get super upset or super angry or whatever. Like, I don't react in the same way actually that even the average person does. Right. And this is something it generally serves me well, because it means I can do all the things that I do and face all the criticism and backlash or whatever, and not want to just go hide and curl up in a ball and cry and you know, feel bad for myself. You know, it does have some downsides too, because sometimes people think that I can be a little bit too cold and too blunt in some of the things that I say. But yeah, it's really interesting. So given that, and you know, I just think people are naturally emotional, and online it's worse because they can't see each other, right? So much communication is lost. Twitter is actually it's a great way to broadcast, but it's actually a terrible way to communicate. If you think about it, it's a really terrible way to communicate, because it's the furthest thing from a face-to-face real life conversation, right, that you can get. What we're doing here is probably the second best way of communicating.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I like to think that live video is the most social form of social media that exists, apart from us being in the same room and you know, me being able to give you an elbow bump. You know, we can't fist bump anymore.
Yeah.
I found the big five test. I'm going to take this because I've taken the Myers-Briggs. And
okay. It's way better than Myers-Briggs.
Okay, cool. I'm an ENFP, I think, is my my Myers-Briggs. Something like that. Yeah. And anyway, super interesting to me that this reveals how you're able to stay so cool on Twitter, right? Because you don't get triggered, right? That's what a lot of people, that's what that word means, right? You push somebody's button, you pull their trigger, and bleh, they got to blow up and tell you what they think. And we live in this era where, regardless, and I'm not taking a side here, regardless of what you think of the president, when I see people responding to tweets from the president of the United States with F you, I'm thinking, what kind of ear? I would never, when Obama was president or when Bush was, I don't care who it is, I would never, ever respond to the president of the United States with hostility. And it just boggles my mind.
Yeah, no, you're correct. I mean, it doesn't matter who it is, though. Like, everyone is, I mean, I guess in one sense that it's good that people are sort of more humanized, and the sort of hierarchy and feeling that, you know, people are totally sort of separated or on different echelons is somewhat diminished by social media, because it is very much like everyone's got the same abilities to reach everybody. Doesn't matter if you're a troll with zero followers or you've got 30 million followers, they can both communicate with each other. And unless one of them is blocked or whatever, it'll come through and someone can look at it and see it on their phone. But yeah, like I said, I think a lot of the problem is just that it's really just a bad way to communicate. So much communication is nonverbal, as we know. And if you're looking at someone in the eye and you can see their facial responses, you can hear the tone of their voice, you can see whether they're smiling or if they're angry or if they're getting upset or if they, you could, whatever, you can read a person. You know what I mean? Right. If I make a joke, that I say to you here, it's very clear to you if I'm making a joke, because I'll say it, I'll have a smile on my face, we'll be chuckling, whatever. Even if it was a bad joke, it was something that was a bit offensive, we can communicate in real time and read each other. And even if, or if I say something that is, oh, I sort of missaid, you could be like, oh, what do you mean by that? Or you can give feedback in real time. So there's far less misunderstanding and there's much more empathy. And the further you go, the further you go from a real life face-to-face conversation, the more you abstract away from that and the more you're losing in the communication. So like we already said, you know, sitting in a room together, that's number one. What we're doing right now, number two, next best would be doing this, but without the video, just the audio. That way, at least we can't see each other anymore, but you've still got the tone of voice. You've still got the real-time communication. Worse than that, you come down to maybe like long-form writing, and then worse than that, short-form writing, let alone short-form writing where people are incentivized, in fact, because they know there's some sort of audience, people are incentivized to give their hot takes or to give their, their mic drop moment or to dunk on that person or to make that person feel, it becomes this weird game where rather than trying to communicate and empathize with another human being, you're trying to sort of tear down an avatar, right? So when people see me on Twitter, they just see that little purple icon with my face in it. And they're not thinking like, oh, that's a real human being there. That's a person who has feelings and thoughts and, maybe they're going through some stuff and, maybe I should be nice to that person. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's even worse where people don't have their real names and people don't have their real, their real photos or whatever. Right. It's just an icon. It's like, well, whatever. It's easy to forget that there's someone behind that. And there's someone who is reading what you're saying. Like when you're saying, whatever horrible thing you're saying to that person, people are thinking, someone's like looking at their phone and there is a real human being who is reading that. So I think that's why people do it. But like I said before, in terms of my own behavior, my own communication, I am not perfect at all, but I do my best. And I do think, considering the size of my following, that I do a good job to be fair to people and to be kind to people and not to unnecessarily, aggress upon or target people or insult people. I've got the platform to do that, right? If I wanted to like rip people apart, then I could do it. And I could send my followers after them. But
you remember in the 80s, the Frankie Say campaigns, Frankie Say Relax, right? From Frankie Goes to Hollywood. And that's
vaguely.
I could see a campaign around you called Zooby Doo, right? Around character qualities, and traits, it's like kind of like be as a role model because you are, whether you like it or not, right? Mm-hmm. When you put yourself out there and you share, your opinions, you've become a leader and you're developing a tribe, have developed a tribe. Your tribe is growing. So mm-hmm. Zooby-Doo. I'm a marketer by trade. I've been doing this for years. Branding. When we talk about anonymity on social, eggs talking to you, right? On Twitter, an egg, completely anonymous account. I wonder, have you dabbled yet with any of the decentralized social platforms that are springing up?
Which ones are totally decentralized? I dabble on some which are very sort of pro-free speech, like Minds.com. I've got an account there, and I'll be hopefully doing a live event with them later on this year. I don't know if it's truly decentralized though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when we say when I say decentralized, I'm leaning towards empowering people more, right?
Okay. Yeah.
EOS just released voice.com. They're in beta right now. They actually spent $25 million on the domain for voice.com to have it. One of the ones that I really like is called rebuzz.io. It's like Instagram only. Hmm. Get rewarded in cryptocurrency for your posts and in your engagement. And you're a crypto guy. Like I've seen your posts about this. So what's your hot take on Bitcoin and crypto and the future of digital money?
Oh, wow. Wow. I'm a crypto fan. I have been in it since 2017. I heard about it considerably earlier than that. And like a lot of people, was kicking myself, I didn't do my research and get involved. I think that's a common story. But I'm very drawn to, I'm pretty libertarian minded. In these lockdown periods, I'm certainly realizing I'm maybe even far more libertarian than I realized, because
all of culture is moving that way, right? There's this general shift of, I think everybody's thinking of where they were on the spectrum is collectively shifting.
I don't know. I feel like people are shifting towards authoritarianism here, to be honest with you.
I hope not.
But I think it's clearly showing that divide, which is what I'm noticing. So yeah, I mean, in terms of having a deflationary, decentralized currency, that in itself, that is censorship resistant, and you know, travels across borders quickly. That in itself is a huge sell to me. It didn't take a long time. Once I understood Bitcoin and I understood the fundamentals and I understood the fact that, yes, it is limited. Because just getting your head around that idea, right? Something that's digital being limited.
21 million ever.
Yeah, that took a while. But once I understood the concept, I mean, I was sold on the proposition quite easily and quite quickly. And so in terms of crypto, I mean, that's like the main one I'm interested in. There's other projects that I have an interest and some stake in. But to me, Bitcoin is sort of is the big one. That's the one I'm sort of really looking at long term. And again, I think what's interesting with Bitcoin is I think it depends a lot on how you view the world, because a lot of the things that people say as criticisms of Bitcoin are actually the things that make it attractive to someone like myself, right? Some people will say, oh, it's not backed by any government. I'm like, that's the point. You know, I'm like, that's literally the point. You know, or someone will say, oh, it's limited. So, you know, that's not good because you need to be able to increase the amount. I'm like, no, that's also a selling point, right? That's a problem with the currencies that we currently have and things like that. And look, I'm no monetary expert. I'm no economic expert, but I understand the basics of most things that are important. I understand the basics of money, of economics, of things like that, just knowing how the system works. And I mean, we're seeing this right now, right? Where people are just printing trillions and trillions, printing trillions of dollars. And, you know, we'll see long-term what the effect on that is in terms of inflation and other things. But the whole idea that that's even possible, I mean, I know people want it to be done because people want their short-term money, but people should be concerned by the idea that the government can just, or the Fed, you know, if we're being specific, can just print trillions of dollars just like that. Yes, I know there's
not be any consequences.
People should be.
In my drawer behind me, I've got a Zimbabwean $1 trillion bill. It's a real thing, right?
The population
printed so much money that they actually got to the place where they're printing $1 trillion bills, and that's worth like a loaf of bread.
Not even. And you know what? And you know that $1 trillion bill? I believe that's after they'd already knocked off like 10 zeros or something. So it got ridiculous. And then this happened when I was in school. And what they did is they just rebased the currency, right? They just said, okay, we're going to just make 10 billion is now 100 or whatever. So they actually knocked it off. And then the hyperinflation just kept going. So that $1 trillion note you have is actually might be like a billion trillion in the sort of former thing. So it's a trillion after they've already revalued it. So that's obviously an extreme example. But we've seen other examples in history. You can just even look at normal inflation, right? Just look at how the spending power of money changes and see how it changes against wages, house prices, things like that. And I think the sell of Bitcoin is clear. And people say that nobody uses Bitcoin. I've received multiple payments in Bitcoin. I've had people pay me for services, pay me for goods in Bitcoin. And it's cheaper than PayPal or using any other service. It's very easy. And I think its stuff is still in its early stages. But I'm at an interesting age because I have seen the adoption curve of a lot of different things now, right? I remember when the internet wasn't really a thing. I remember when email started getting a hold, let alone coming forward and seeing the adoption curve of all the different social media, of smartphones, et cetera. People forget, like, the iPhone was only invented in what, 2006?
Seven.
Yeah. 2007, right. So in 2007, people can be, oh, you know, this, no one has an iPhone, right? There's nothing here. Yeah. In 2004, people were like, oh, this Facebook thing, like, what's the point of it? No one's on it, right? That's what people say. No one uses it. And it's like, okay, so everything people are saying about Bitcoin and crypto, I'm like, look, I've heard this before now multiple times.
Right.
So sure, it's not mainstream yet and not everybody is using it, but that is just because it's still early, right? It's still early. Not everybody was using anything in the early stages. And it will grow, and there is a network effect, of course, just as there is with any other system of money or any other network. So I am a long-term believer. I'm not a let me make a quick buck kind of guy. I'm like, okay, this is something that I believe that when I have children, I think they'll be using crypto day to day, just like we use, just like I use social media and the internet day to day. I just think they might not even be aware that they're using something called cryptocurrency. It'll just be like normal.
Well, it's going to be, you know, we, I think back, remember 8-tracks, you know, that a friend of mine, he had an 8-track player in his El Camino. And, you know, there's kids that now vinyl's kind of making a comeback. So a lot of people know what records are, but you start talking about a VCR, like what? Videotapes? What is that? We stream everything. Well, they're not going to know what physical dollars are, right? We're not going to have physical cash anymore. And now with, you know, knowing that the virus can be passed from paper money, all the more reason that we got to get rid of dirty fiat.
Yeah. I mean, look, stuff happens. People forget how quickly stuff changes too. That's the thing. I mean, I'm still a young man, and when I was like a very young kid, you still can render a circle on a computer screen. Right, you didn't have enough pixels to render a circle on a screen, and we went from the video games. I mean, the first console I remember my family having was the Atari 2600, and in that time, just in my lifetime, you've gone from literal stick men with no faces, just, you know, a handful of pixels to make up a character. If you have a ball in the game or like a bullet or whatever, it's just a square, literally a square. Not even an octagon. And you've gone from that to modern PC gaming and VR and Xbox One and PS4 and being able to see the pores on someone's face and the sweat dripping down their face and like the lighting effects and the mud splashing. And that's just in my lifetime, right? That's my lifetime. And I've still got much more lifetime to go, hopefully. I'm staying away from the corona. And so I'm like, man, when I have children, what are they going to, everything we have right now, when my kids are my age, they're going to be talking about it like I'm now talking about the Atari 2600.
Right. And I think of it this way, this amazing piece of technology, this is an iPhone X right here. You hand this to a child today and it'll be the worst piece of technology they'll ever hold.
Exactly. They'll be looking back at it like, oh my gosh, can you believe people used to look at, when we look at the old mobile phones where you had to, you know, pull out the antenna and it's there. You see the old ones with the briefcase.
Yep.
And you're like, oh my goodness, what on earth was that?
Or the car phones where it was actually installed in the car. It was a corded thing. You'd have to have an antenna at the back of your car. Hey, man, I really appreciate you coming on and
sharing.
I mean, put your website up here so people can go and check out ZubiMusic.com. We didn't even get into fitness other than your record deadlift there in the UK. But I mean, you're one buff dude and you coach people. And talk about this book really quickly, Strong Advice.
Yeah, sure. So Strong Advice, Zubi's Guide to Fitness for Everybody. So this is my first book. It's now sold approaching 2,000 copies totally independently. So thank you to everyone who's got it. So I wanted to put together a guide based off of the 16 years that I've been training and all the stuff that I've learned in terms of training, mindset, and nutrition. I wanted to put together a concise guide that's great for beginners, intermediates, and even perhaps as a reminder for more advanced people of what you need to do. It teaches you how to structure a diet, how to gain weight, lose weight, build muscle, stay motivated, how to eat, how to train, how to exercise efficiently and effectively, everything like that. And it's pretty concise. It's available on the ebook version. I've also done the audiobook as well. If you like my voice, then I narrated it myself. I do once in a while do paperback runs as well, which are sold out currently. But if you're interested in fitness and you're interested in learning and reaching your goals, then please check out the book, Strong Advice.
And that is some strong advice right there. ZubiMusic.com, at ZubiMusic on Twitter. I think that's Twitter's pretty much your jam, right? That's where people should follow you to see the latest.
Yeah, I'm on everything, but Twitter is the best one, at ZubiMusic.
Thanks, man. Really, really appreciate you. And thank you guys for watching. Make sure you subscribe to the Joel Comm Show on iTunes or listen on Spotify or any other of the crazy places that you might find me. And until next time, do good stuff.